I was the fastest in that session and my first ever time round the Northwest, and to leave an impression like that is what makes legends. If I get a very good opportunity to go to World Superbikes, and I believe it's an opportunity that I could win the championship with, yes, I would go. But if there isn't an opportunity where I could go and win the championship, or I don't feel it'd be strong enough for me to win the championship, I wouldn't lose any sleep over it. When you ride a bike and you crash it and you come off and you go, I'm not going to do that again. Well, that's the natural mindset. We're just all daft enough to go, we're going to do that again. There's never a big enough problem in the world that I'm never going to face than losing my dad. I always say, if you ever think you've ever got a weakness on me, or you ever see me upset or not on a good day, don't ever take it as a weakness, because the minute the visor goes down, I know it sounds cheesy, but I will beat you.
Hello there, and welcome to Full Chat with me, David Prutton.
And me, Ewan Thomas, celebrating all things we love about being on two wheels. Full Chat is powered by Bikesure. As the UK's largest independent motorcycle insurance broker, they'll tailor a quote to your exact needs, helping you save money on your annual bike, scooter or moped insurance.
Don't forget to press subscribe on YouTube so that you never miss an episode, or you can press the follow button on Apple or Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts from.
Right, Prats, I'm looking forward to this one today, because today's guest is one of the country's top motorcycle racers. He's been around bikes for as long as he can remember. He started racing when he was a nipper. He literally is one of the stars of British Superbike Championships at the moment. But above that, and probably more importantly to me, is a thoroughly lovely bloke. It's the one and only Storm Stacey. Hi, Storm.
I'm pretty blown away by what I've just watched. You guys do that intro. I feel like... you make me feel like an amateur.
Mate, it's taken us about 7 series to get to this point, so don't be blown away.
How many times have you practiced that?
Straight off the bat, Stone. That's how we roll on this one, mate.
We've got this northern southern sort of chemistry between me and Prats. It just flows, mate. But
the way Ewan rattled that off, I'm convinced you must be working in the call centre when you're not doing this.
Well, yeah, times are tough, mate. It's been a long time since I was an athlete. If anyone's watching this and they want me to work at a call centre, I'm ready.
Storm, don't push him down that way, because he's literally happy to do anything as long as it's got a freebie attached to it. I'm sure you know Ewan well enough.
Yeah, now,
Storm, it's a pleasure to meet you, mate. I mean, what a year it's been so far. Great guns for you going so far in BSB on the BMW. 2 wins at the Northwest at the beginning of May. It's been tremendous, really. What, from your point of view, your skill set, what you're very good at, what you're passionate about, what made you want to break away from the short circuits and try your hand at road racing, which quite obviously you've taken to like a duck to water, mate?
It wasn't really the aspect of the road race. It was, there was a bit of it, like the year before I went over with the team, because obviously the team I ride for in British Superbikes is a road racing team. And I went and watched the TT, I went and watched the Northwest, and Michael was riding at the Northwest last year, because it was before the TT, and everyone goes and does it as like a tune-up race to get them up to speed for the TT, really. And we were there, and Michael was saying how good it was doing 200 mile an hour down the roads and stuff, and I was kind of like, just shut up, will you? I don't really want to hear about how good it is. I can tell by watching, and his facial expressions and everything when he's taking his helmet off, he can't help but smile, and he's usually quite a miserable person, so to see him smile means it must have been good. So I was a bit like, yeah, don't know, yeah, really like it. And I almost kind of, I always kind of promised my dad that I wouldn't do road racing. And when I think of that in my head, I think, oh, he meant the TT, not other road races. He meant the TT. So in my head, I'm like, yeah, I could do this, because Dad kind of meant the TT, not Northwest 200. He never said Northwest 200. So
not specific enough.
Yeah. So like it was something I was a bit like, right. Yeah, next year I want to come and have a go at this. And I like to say that I'm a businessman that rides motorbikes and good at motorbikes. We're all in it for the right reasons, because we love motorbikes and we're passionate about it. But if you can make a few quid out of it as well, then it's all good. Everyone's got to eat. There's a short window, as a lot of people know in racing and any sport, really. It's very short on how you can make it. And if you can make as much while you can, then it's happy days. I knew that going to Northwest would mean that Irish fans are so passionate about bike racing. It is unbelievable. Like, when I went and watched it last year, I couldn't believe how, like, you walk around and everyone's got a Michael Dunlop t-shirt on, or they've got a John McGuinness t-shirt on, or you don't really see many people just with a normal t-shirt on. They've either got one or the other. They're mad for one of the riders. And I thought, I want a piece of that. Mm. I want to be loved by Irish fans. I want to be in that group of people. And we went there, and someone actually called me this morning asking about merchandise and what to do and stuff like that. And they were like, oh, I bet you killed it at Northwest. And I was like, when we got there, there's only people that just watch like road racing. They don't watch PSB. They don't watch World Superbikes. They don't watch MotoGP. They have no idea. They're proper old school Irish folk that live in the countryside and they just watch road racing. That's all they watch. So we rocked up there and they're like, oh my God, who's this Storm Stacy? They're like, they've got no idea at all. They're like, they've got this massive merchandise trailer with Storm Stacy on it, Storm merch. The flags on it, like massive, like towering over, like even next to the Monster Energy stand. And they're like, who is this guy? Like, we're in prime position because I had a bit of a fallout with the organisers. And I basically says, right, I says, I'll come, but I says, I want prime spot with the merch trailer. I says, I want to be in there. I says, I want no issues. Everything they put us right by the entrance, which is good. So I've got to try and get that spot every time now.
Was it a case then where you rock up and they're almost kind of stood their arms folded going then, come on then. What have you got? I bet you that just sounds like music to your ears. You're rubbing your hands together going, I'll show you exactly what I could do.
My mate saying, I bet you killed it. We got there and no one cared. No one cared who Storm Stacy was. They didn't care. They were like, who's this guy with this flash trailer like turning up thinking he's like...
thinking he owns a guy.
Basically. and then come the end of the week, it looked like we'd been ransacked.
Yeah.
Because I'd done so well and won the races and... beat Michael Dunlop, which wasn't a done thing.
That's massive doing it in his own backyard, mate.
It just doesn't happen. I've never raced against Michael either. I've done track days and stuff with him, but never had to race against him. And he's a fierce competitor. He doesn't take lightly. And to beat him was just like, the Irish fans were like, wow, we like this kid. And they were coming in the trailer and they were buying clothes that weren't even for the right size.
Brilliant. What interests me here, Storm, is the fact that you said, you know, the fans are totally separate. It's a different ball game. You know, track racing, short circuit, road racing, a total different genre of people who watch it. Did you find the racing, in terms of, we've spoken to people who do road racing and track racing, and they said it's almost a different sport. This just illustrates your talent, doesn't it? The fact that you can go from short circuit, go to road and beat Dunlop in his own backyard. I mean, were you surprised at how well you took to it?
I was surprised how well I took to it. But I had so many people saying, you'll learn the track so quick. You'll be quick around there. And to be honest, it is a big triangle. There's certain bits where you have got to push and there's certain bits where you maybe don't want to push. There's one corner, well, there's two corners really. For instance, there's the station corner, which is about 180 mile an hour corner. And we did lose someone in the week that the race was on. We had a death on that corner. And it basically, put me into reality. I was a bit like, wow, yeah. But I think the good thing with the Northwest is there hasn't been a fatality for 10 years. Obviously, there's been crashes, but no actual deaths. And then there's another corner called like Church Corner, where if you like lose the front maybe a bit late going into there, you're just going to hit a brick wall. And they don't tend to be too soft. So you'd be in a bit of a bad way. But then you think of that corner, and then you could think, yeah, the next corner, yeah, coming out of there is fast. That's where the last death was 10 years ago. And then turn one as well is flat out fourth gear. And then if you go wide, you're just going to hit a house. So you can't really get it wrong. But yeah, it's kind of, you sit here and think about it now and you go, yeah, bloody hell, I wouldn't want to go fast around there, but I did. Mm. It's, you just get on with it. Because obviously I had to speak to my mum about it before I went, and it wasn't a very nice conversation. I said, oh, thinking about going to do the Northwest. And she was like, I don't really want you doing road racing, because what you've got to understand is no parent's ever going to want their kids to do that. Because I think even if I had kids now, I would never want them to do it. But if they wanted to do it enough, then you'd have to let them. It's if anyone wants to do anything in life, you've got to leave them to it. It's their choice. So I spoke to mum about it. She wasn't really that impressed about it. I think there was a few tears and stuff like that, so it was a bit difficult, but it was obviously something I was passionate about wanting to do. And then, yeah, it's to go and do it. And then we got back, and she said she looked back on it. She said she quite enjoyed it. So I think that means I'm allowed to go again now.
I think that just reflects, Storm, really, the way you're built. And I wouldn't, as Ewan says, we've had the pleasure on here of speaking to so many wonderful people from the racing kind of world. And to bracket you all together would be wrong, because you're all so unique and individual and extremely talented. But it's about what you're built for and what you're capable of doing. And the reason that people like you are successful is because of what you've got as a makeup, both kind of mentality wise, emotion wise, and skill wise, being able to handle beautiful motorcycles at a very high speed. So as you're saying there, you speak to your mother about it, and quite understandably as a parent, you're thinking, my word, but you've obviously been given the wings to be able to go and express yourself and to be very, very good at what you do. Hence the fact that maybe she does slowly get her head round it. I mean, would she get her head round, obviously, first and foremost, the Northwest, and then maybe the TT? Is that a similar thing? Is that part of the plan? Is that something you want to build up to?
I hear stories of people growing up and they'll say, like, oh, I had a go on a bike and I had a crash and then I never rode one again. Hmm. That's what everyone should think. Mm-hmm. Because they're dangerous.
Yes.
When you ride a bike and you crash it and you come off and you go, I'm not going to do that again. Well, that's the natural mindset. Mm. We're just all daft enough to go, we're going to do that again. I didn't mind that. That was all right. So, but like my mindset when I went to the Northwest, I said to my mum and that, and this was kind of like trying to calm her down and stuff. I says, if it's raining, the Northwest goes on when it's wet or dry. Whereas the TT doesn't, you get a little bit of rain or anything, they cancel it and stop it, and wind and stuff like that. It's very, the circumstances are a lot different for the TT than the Northwest. They kind of run whatever. So I said to mum, I says, if it's raining, I says, I won't ride. I says, I'll not go out. I'll sit it out until it's dry. I says, my first year, it's not worth it going out. Well, we got there and the first day it was absolutely lashing it down. And who was the first one out with his helmet on? We do as bike racers because we're clever enough to make the right decisions in the right time, but we're daft enough to take our brain out at the right time when you need to as well. Yeah. And I said to my mum I wouldn't go out, but I did. And I was the fastest in that session of my first ever time round the Northwest. And to leave an impression like that is what makes legends.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can see that completely.
Storm, you mentioned your dad earlier, the fact he didn't want you to do road racing. If we may, let's touch upon a really difficult part in your life. And I know you speak openly about this, and I know you take your dad everywhere with you. And I've spoken to you about mental health. You know, I have my own struggles. I have great days. I have bad days. But for anyone to lose a parent is tough. But as a 13-year-old boy, to lose your dad to suicide, when your dad was so integral of part of your motorbike racing, you could have gone two ways. You could have said, well, it was me and my dad. We were into the bikes. He's no longer here. I'm done. Or, as I assume it has been for you, it gives you that real fire in your belly, that desire to make him proud every day, to be the best you can be on a bike. Firstly, how tough was it, clearly, to lose your dad? And am I right in thinking it's given you that real fire? Because I know you pretty well, and you've got some fierce determination about you. And surely it's in your dad's memory why you ride so well.
Yeah, it does. It's fuel on the fire, isn't it? And I think what the maddest thing to get your head around is like when I was at Goodwood at the weekend, I saw Colin Edwards, and I've not seen Colin since probably 11 years ago. We went to his boot camp in Texas, and that was with my dad and stuff like that. And I said, Colin, yeah, I haven't seen you since like 10 years or 11 years since I came on your boot camp with my dad and stuff like that. And I says, it's mad, like, since we lost him and that. And he goes, oh, did you lose your dad then? I says, yeah, he said he committed suicide. And he's like, oh, my God, that's crazy. Like, you were so happy. You were such a good family and, like, you had such a good time and all that. And it's like, how mad does that look for him from the outside as well? Even him, like, he doesn't need to worry about me, but he's sitting there now thinking, well, why the hell did his dad do that then now if that's the way they are? But it's just the way the world works, isn't it? And unfortunately, I always say it is, you can always prevent suicide, and obviously everyone has their thoughts, they do, and even do I, but unfortunately, when someone wants to do something enough, like I said about road racing, if someone wants to do something enough, they're going to do it. But yeah, for me, I use it as fuel. I've recently had certain riders try and play mind games with me and trying to get into my head, like through my girlfriend and stuff like that. And it's the way the world works in every aspect. I think it happens in business. It happens in racing. Well,
with regards to your dad's though?
No, not regards my dad. But,
right, sorry, I misconstrued that. I thought for one second dark place.
Where yeah, I was going on. With it was saying I get people try and get in my head about stuff and they've even had girlfriends in the past where they're like, why are you not upset about this or this has happened? And I'm like, nothing will ever come close to seeing what I saw on the day of losing my dad. Mm. Nothing ever bothers me. Nothing is ever a big enough problem. It just completely shifted my mindset to think that there's never a big enough problem in the world that I'm never going to face than losing my dad.
Do you think you use that then, mate, in a positive way? Such a negative and painful experience that happened to you, losing your father. Do you think in a weird way then you think, I'm going to cherish every day because nothing's going to hurt you?
Nothing's ever going to be as bad as that. Even if I have a bad day, it's never a bad day because it's never as bad as that, is it?
Yeah, that's great, man.
I think as well, I mean, the your whole kind of persona and who you are. Persona is the wrong word because that sounds like it's an affected thing. But who you are, I mean, the top hats, which are a tribute to your dad, who was known for wearing cowboy hats and top hats, wasn't he? And you, as you're talking there and speaking very candidly to myself and you, and we really do thank you for that. The growth, for want of a better word, that's come from what you've experienced over the last 10 years, the learning curve must have been so sharp, but it sounds like you've got to a place, and I'm sure, I mean, there'll be no end point to it at all, will there? There'll just be different ways that you think about such a tragic circumstance, but your ability to help that give balance to the rest of your life, is that one of the big kind of learning lessons that come from it?
Yeah, I don't know, I hadn't really thought about it. Yeah, just take every day as it comes, innit, and just keep trying to learn as much as you can. That's what we're on the planet for, to learn and be the best version of ourselves every day. And I think it's probably something for me I have to work on sometimes, is that maybe do have to, like I say, the mindset that I am, like, oh, nothing's ever going to be a big enough problem as that. I've got to realize that sometimes what's not a problem for me is still a problem for someone else. And maybe I struggle with that sometimes, because I'll be like, oh, I don't know what's wrong with you, because like, it's not really that big of a deal. But to me, it's not big of a deal, but to them it is, because that's maybe a bigger deal than they've ever had in their life. So it's definitely something I struggle to get my head around sometimes.
You must be really proud, as must your mum, because having spoke to you about this subject of men's mental health and speaking out, you are a role model to other youngsters who perhaps think, you know, I'm not going to talk about it. There's still a slight stigma about guys have got to be tough. And if I say I'm struggling, it's a sign of weakness. It's not weakness, it's strength to reach out. But are you self-aware that even walking around in a top hat, you're a good guy. You talk about this.
I'll say to like riders or anyone I race against or anything, I'll say, right, if I ever come upset, crying to you, saying I feel down, I feel upset, don't you ever take it as a weakness, because I'm still going to beat you on track. No matter no matter how sad I may be on a day or something like that. Not that it ever happens, because I conduct myself quite well with everything, and I feel I've got good things in place for mental health and myself. But I always say, if you ever think you've ever got a weakness on me, or you ever see me upset or not on a good day, don't ever take it as a weakness, because the minute the visor goes down, I know it sounds cheesy, but I will beat you, whether you like it or not. If I'm upset or I'm in a good mood, you're still going to get the same whooping.
Love it.
That mixture of the two, Storm, is just so inspiring. I mean, given the obvious insane amount of natural talent that you've got, allied to this mental and emotional capacity for performance, just how far do you think you can go? I mean, there's nothing in your mind that I can tell right now that's stopping you whatsoever from achieving what you want to achieve. Do you have a timeline? Do you have a set amount of goals? Are you just holding on and taking this ride and enjoying every single minute of it?
Yeah, taking the ride and enjoying every single minute of it. I say my probably weak point is the gym. I don't go to the gym enough, and I definitely need to go more. Like, I used to train like an animal, and it was a bit of a strange time in my career, because I trained like hell, and I was so fit. I was absolutely ripped, lean, everything, and I could go forever like racing. But the bike I was on was absolutely useless. So no matter how fit I was, it made no difference, because the bike wasn't getting any better anyway. So I kind of like backed off a bit, and I was like, yeah, maybe took my foot off the gas, and maybe now I need to like start ramping training up again now, because it does seem to be a bit harder than I remember now.
and Storm, you talk about bikes you're racing, right? So BSB, World Superbikes, MotoGP. I mean, what's on your horizon? Because we know you've got the talent, you've clearly got the determination. Do you look at MotoGP and think that's where I want to eventually be, or is it the roads? What's your plan?
I think I've actually got as far as I have in racing, because I'm a bit like, it'll be what it'll be. If I get to where I get to, it'll be that. That's what it is. I think the last year of racing we actually paid for as a family was 2019, and I said to Mum, I says, if it doesn't really work out this year, I says, like, we'll do this one last year, and we'll knock it on the head, and I'll find something else to do. I said, I'm not too, like, racing isn't the be-all and end-all. As much as we love it, and we love motorsport, we love engines, we love everything, it's not the be-all and end-all, and you will always be able to live without it. Let's be realistic. I said, I'll find something else to do, whether it's, I'll set a business up or do something else. And my always mindset would be, like, if I couldn't make it in racing to get to World Superbikes or something, I'd just set a business up where I can make as much money as I can, and I'll just pay to go and do World Superbikes if I have to. Like, I'll just find another way to get in there if I could. That was always my mindset, even from a young age. Not so much now, because obviously I'm on quite a good road with what I'm doing. But yeah, I think I've got as far as I have because I've been a bit like, it'll be what it'll be. I've not like forced teams, I've not pressed anyone. I'm not too like needy for it. You do see some teams sometimes push back on people if they're a bit like down their throat saying, you need me, you need me, you need me. Results do the talking. You don't need to go and like push down people's throats what they need to do. People don't like being told what to do. So let people make their own decisions. And I think that's what's got me so far in racing, because I've seen people so desperate for it and you see it kill them. And I'm like, you don't, like, you're hurting yourself and you're actually making racing worse because you feel like you need to perform. You're always going to perform. That's what you're there to do. So don't worry about it. That's literally why you're there. So don't make it your sole worry about it, that's what you need to do. So, yeah, I think my mindset of World Superbikes will be, if I get a very good opportunity to go to World Superbikes and I believe it's an opportunity that I could win the championship with, yes, I would go. But if there isn't an opportunity where I could go and win the championship, or I don't feel it'd be strong enough for me to win the championship, I won't lose any sleep over it. Because the main reason that makes me think like that now is the racing world is very strange at the minute. And we went down to Goodwood at the weekend and obviously seen you there. And the attendance there is unbelievable how big it is and rammed, and you can't go anywhere without like nudging into someone and saying sorry, and it's just ridiculous. World Superbikes at Donington, I think there was 50,000 people across the weekend. That's not a lot of people for a race weekend. And that's world superbikes. Mm. I think BSB gets 150 over a weekend.
My word.
So if you actually look at it, what are you going to World Superbikes for? You're going to just be world champion. You're going to lose a fan base. You're not going to lose a fan base, but you're not going to have the fan base
you're not gaining anything.
You're not actually gaining anything because they're not going to have the people following you around the country. There's people coming to BSB that I see that can just about afford to come BSB. That's their holiday. Mm. They don't go on holidays abroad. Their holiday is coming to British Superbikes. So to go to World Superbikes, you'd lose a massive fan base. So there's so much to weigh up going to World Championship. And people quickly forget about the people. There's riders that jump off so quick and try and go to World Superbikes, and they don't actually... I think I'm more loyal to the fans than anything. Because people like people and people buy from people. Mm. And I always say if you've got a million followers and you could get £1 off each of them followers, you're going to be all right, aren't you? You're not going to struggle to eat bread and wine, are you?
Do you know what, Storm? And I'm sure Ewan will back me up on this, and this is no disrespect to any of the amazing riders and professional riders we've had on here before, but I think Ewan, Storm's the first one to kind of reference the fans in that type of way because we look at, and it's a strange thing because my history of playing football and Ewan's of being out on a track, that fans are so fundamental to that experience. Whereas I think maybe it's a bit lazy from us to think you put your helmet on and then everyone disappears. But your take on it, Storm, is quite clearly they're as much a part of what you're doing on the bike as anything else, really, are they? That's exactly what this is to you, and that's what makes it feel so special to you.
Well, I've literally got my dream job. My hobby is my job. And I'm so lucky and so thankful, so grateful. And I've got some great people behind me that support me. And when I was at the Northwest and I finished that first Superstock race and I won, one of the commentators actually had his mic on. And he's an ex-racer as well. Anyone who's listened to this will probably work out pretty quickly who it is. I'm not going to say his name because I don't need to. But when I was rattling off my sponsors saying thank you to them and stuff, and I wasn't saying it in a, oh, thank you to these do this, thank you to these, do this. And I wasn't doing it like that. I was going, oh, yeah, thank you to Black Onyx. Thank you to Gareth on my helmet. I says, we made it, we've done it. I says, K-Tech suspension. I says, they're the best in the world. I says, you need K-Tech in your bike. Like, I'm just making it funny. I'm making it watchable. Yeah.
Full of love as well.
And his mic was actually turned on and you could hear him in the background going, oh, God. Like, as I'm saying all this and I watched it back now and I'm like, I'm not really too bothered about it. It is what it is. But I've heard a podcast he did talking about it and he's basically saying that I'm at a level where I don't need to thank my sponsors anymore. They should be privileged to be a part of my journey and be with me. And I'm like, that's how you lose sponsors. That's how you lose sponsors. I can only do what I do because of the people that are around me. And when you were saying then about you'd like football and running and stuff like that, I actually envy football because of how they can fill a stadium is unbelievable. Mm. Bike racing's never like that, and it never will. Well, it might one day, but very unrealistic to think like that. But football's unbelievable how it can pull a crowd together. But imagine Ewan had finished a running race and then you'd finished a football match and you wave at the crowd and there's no one there.
You'd kill it, to be fair, Stubb. You're absolutely right.
So you say it's strange, and I'm the first one to actually appreciate the fans and talk about the fans, but none of it has any atmosphere or meaning if there is no fans.
Do you know what, Storm? I think it's a credit to you. As you say, it's all about the fans. If we don't have fans, then who are we? And I noticed that. You've got an aura about you. In good word, people love you. It's no surprise to me manufacturers and people want to be associated with you because you respect the fans and you acknowledge them. So just keep being you. Just keep being you and doing what you're doing.
No matter what, I take pride in people even saying, like, when I was younger and growing up, my dad always bought me what he thought I needed. I never necessarily asked for stuff as a kid. My dad just always turned up with stuff. My dad did quite well when I was younger, and there'd always be a new bike or there'd be something. And then he had a McLaren SLR and he'd be getting me doing donuts in that. And it was just a mad life growing up. We had an army tank ripping around the field and stuff like that. And a life like that, looking back, will turn you into a bit of a snotty brat because you've got everything. And I take pride in people that knew me then say what a nice lad I am now and what I've turned into. And I like to have my shoulders high with that to think that I am a good person. And I will always take pride in, even if I won a £1 million race now or I was on £1 million a year or £100 million a year, I would still come over for a race meeting and have beans on toast with a cup of tea. Because I just love it. And why would that ever change? I've been out for fancy meals with sponsors, and we went on a helicopter to the casino a couple of weeks ago, and it's like, it's all good stuff, but I'm happy enough having a cup of Yorkshire tea with beans on toast. I'm happy as Larry that, and I can tinker on some bikes in a workshop and keep doing what I'm doing and working on a car or something like that, messing about. Quickly have beans on toast and then back to it quickly. But it's nice to enjoy the things now and again. But I like to take pride that nothing will ever change me, because it just shouldn't. It never needs to.
Please don't change, mate. Just stay as you are. Never change.
It's the finer things in life that keep it all in, give you that real sense of balance, doesn't it? In the sense of what you like as being not. And it's just nice, Storm, to have two out of the three of us that are really down to earth on this podcast.
Yeah, as Prats chats to us from the West Wing of his manor in Harrogate.
It would have been so good to say all that then and then just click mute on his mic just to watch him so he could say anything.
Oh, you said that, Storm, and someone spoon-fed you some beans just out of shot, just coming in like that, and you quickly had a bit.
Quick, my waiter.
Right, you can subscribe on this to watch on YouTube so you never miss an episode. Press the follow button on Apple or Spotify or wherever you get your podcast from. Talk to us about being not even 17 and making your senior debut back in 2020. That, I mean, intimidating, scary, exhilarating. Speaking to you now, I bet you absolutely loved it.
Yeah, so to finish 2019 season at 16 years old, to get to the end of the season, we didn't know what we were going to do. We knew that it was always going to cost money again. And bike racing always costs money until you stop paying. it always costs a lot of money until you, like, foot goes down and you're like, yeah, that's it. I'm not paying anymore. I can't pay anymore. And the minute you keep, like, paying every year, you will always pay every year, because people know that you kind of go in this bracket that you go, oh, yeah, that rider, yeah, he'll pay. He'll put money in, because you just kind of get branded like that. And once you get out of that, it's better, obviously. So, we went into that season and we were like, we didn't know what we were going to do. There was a couple of options, but there was going to be rides that were like going to be like £100,000. And we were like, we said this was going to be our last year if we obviously had to pay. So a little bit, and then £100,000 is ridiculous. So, and then the guy who owned the team basically come up to me, and I'd already started the Top Hat thing and building a bit of a fan base with that, and could see the traction it was getting and getting bigger and that. And then maybe the series organisers knew back then as well that I was going to get bigger and keep pushing. He said, well, we'll put you on the superbike because it's more commercially viable to get the sponsors in. And a company called Euro Car Parts paid for my first 3 years on a superbike, and they were basically like, yeah, we understand he's a rookie, if we can get the odd points here and there and we can grow that, then that's phenomenal. So they completely funded everything, really. And amazing. I owe a lot to Euro Car Parts, really, as a company. They've done a lot for me. And then the last 2 years it was Starlink, which basically Starlink's Elon Musk, isn't it? Starline.
That funding's gone through the roof.
Yeah, I know. I'll be on a rocket next. So then, they do the drive shafts and all that. It's a company within Euro Car Parts, so they sponsored that for the next 2 years after as well. And it was just unbelievable. But my first year was 2020, COVID. Prime COVID. It had just come in, and we were like, we didn't know if we were even going to race that year. It was pretty strange time. And And obviously at the time I was working anyway, I had a full-time job like landscape gardening and I was doing that in between racing, and it was a free ride. I just had to turn up, and then it was like only for the last 2 years of that contract with that team that I did get paid, and even then it was 11 grand a year. I let the cat out the bag. It wasn't a lot of money, but I could get by on it and do it as cheap as I can.
So you talk about the year that you kind of went professional, if you like. Yes, you were earning money, albeit maybe not a lot, but this was your opportunity. You were a youngster, and I think of the likes of, you know, Bradley Smith, Scott Redding. Did you find that a bit of a pressure as a youngster? Or hang on, the reins are off. Someone believes in me. A manufacturer said, this kid's got something. And how nice was that to say to your mum, do you know what? We're going to be all right. This riding lark, it's paying for itself now. I mean, how did that feel? You were young.
I think it's one of them things where, you know, people go, oh, I thrive on pressure. I don't think anyone actually thrives on pressure. I think it kind of does, I don't know, it makes you lock in and focus a bit more. You understand the seriousness of the situation. There's obviously a lot of money going into it. But I had enough people around me telling me, don't worry about it. You're going to do what you're going to do. There's no pressure. Don't keep crashing the bike and just keep doing what you're doing. And I had one crash in my first year on that bike, and which is, it wasn't my fault anyway. We come off on some oil at turn one at Silverstone. And that's all I tried to do, just keep my head down, keep learning, taking in as much as I can. But while building a fan base and growing it behind the scenes, whereas maybe if I couldn't get the results on track, I still had a good fan base behind me and I was still earning a few quid out of it.
Given what you talk about, the bike's been a passion and a love, talk us through what's currently in your fleet at home, and if there isn't something there that you want, what would you add to that fleet of bikes or cars?
So at the minute I've sold my rally car that I had. I wanted to get a new one, but like the next one I want to be like 100 grand and I ain't spending that to wrap it around a tree. I've got my old 1981 Rolls Royce that I literally drive every day. I just beat on it. I've probably spent £1,000 on it in the 4 years I've owned it. Me and the girlfriend went to Paris in it not long ago to solely see if it would make it. And it did. Didn't miss a beat, but it's got massive oil leaks on it. So obviously when you have oil leaks, you don't fix the leak. You just keep adding oil, which is what we did.
And just leave little marks where you go.
Exactly. Just so if we get lost, people can find us. I've got a Dodge Ram pickup, 3500. It's over 9 foot wide at the back. But I am doing some work on it at the minute, and someone's put a deposit on it because I am getting rid of it. Now, I may go to America and buy a new one in America and drive it across America and bring it home. That's what I'd like to. I'd like to buy something in America, drive it across, go Elvis's house, do 66, go Vegas, do all that in my own pickup, picture it everywhere, and then bring it back here, and it'd have a lot more meaning. And obviously YouTube it all as well, which I think would be a good, interesting view for people to watch. Got a 1966 Ford Mustang FIA spec race car, which was my dad's that he left for me. Recently acquired a Nissan 350Z that was clapped out on my mate's garden with grass growing through the arches. I saw it and I said, I wish I hadn't seen that. I said, I'd love something like that to go like Nürburgring or something. And he went, mate, if you go and get your trailer now, he says, you come pick it up and you can have it. It didn't cost me anything. So I've got a job list with that. I need to, put new arches on it. New subframe, rear subframe, new flywheel and steering pump. And it's got misfire. So there's a fair few bits to do to that. But I'd like to eventually go the Nürburgring and stuff like that. And if I crash it, I won't really be too bothered because it doesn't owe me anything. What else have I got?
I'm loving the fact you're talking about four wheels as well. This shows you really are a petrol head.
Yeah. Well, I started to understand that, obviously, when I turned 17, I was like, well, I can't get my full bike license until I'm like 20. So I thought, if cars, I can get anything as long as I can insure it. So that's why I just started buying cars, because I was like, I can have anything. As long as I can get insured on it, I can have anything. I could have a Bugatti if I could find a way to insure it and pay for it.
Yeah.
So, whereas a bike, I can't legally have a bike because I wasn't old enough to have my bike license. Then I've got my motorhome that I went down to Goodwood in, which I may be selling at the minute as well because don't really need it. Just kind of got it because if you can, you would. I've got another big motorhome for racing that I go in now. I've just bought a lorry to tow that, so I've bought a 730 horsepower Scania to pull the like big fifth wheel trailer. It's like 48 foot long or something, I think. I bought that off John McGuinness, and it was originally Cal Crutchlow's as well.
Where is all of this stuff, Storm?
Mate, everyone says this, and we literally live in just a four bedroom house. It's a big enough house.
Yeah, it's a four bedroom house, but with a 17,000 square foot driveway.
Yeah, the driveway's not that big. I did do a YouTube video on my channel of me extending the driveway, but it's nowhere near big enough to put anything on it still. And then yeah, we've got a merchandise trailer which we sell all the merch out as well. It's got a little DAF on the front of it, and that's articulated. That was built for Audi had two built. They were 272 grand each, and I only give about 50 grand for it, so I think I did all right out of that. Audi didn't.
I tell you what, mate, if you keep going through the list of the vehicles you've had, we're going to run out of storage on this podcast.
But I'm going down a new venture now.
Okay,
I'm change it up. I'm sick of driving.
You're going to get a helicopter, aren't you?
No, can't afford a helicopter.
A boat?
No, plane.
Plane?
Yeah, I'm going to do my pilot's license, yeah.
No way.
Go on.
Yeah, I've decided, yeah. Yeah, it's something I kind of like was discussing with people over the weekend at Goodwood, and I was like, the drive down here is awful. And then it took like 4 hours to get home. I was like, I am sick of this. Like,
you need to chat to Steve Parrish. He'll sort you out.
Exactly. So I spoke to Steve and I said, like, what license do I need? What do I need to do? Like 40 hours flying time you need. You need a class 2 medical. You need to do 9 exams. They say if you do it fast, you could do it in 3 months. Or if you're doing it steady, you can do it in 6 months. But I think I want to get rid of the motorhome and get rid of the Dodge, and then I'll probably buy myself a plane and then do my lessons and everything in my own plane, because then you'd have to hire one. It works out a lot cheaper. And then I thought, if I ever want to go Ireland for anything, I could just nip in the plane. Or I want to go and watch the TT for a day, I can just jump in the plane and fly over there. If I want to go down to Goodwood, I could just fly down to Goodwood and land at the circuit. If I want to go to London, bike shed or something like that, they want to get me in to do something, I'll just say, pay my landing fees at London City Airport and pick me up. It's a way better way of life, isn't it? If I get to a point where I can earn enough money to buy a piece of land, I can have my own landing strip at my house, put a caravan on there, live in a caravan, and just pull the plane up to the caravan. I won't even need any cars then, because I can just fly everywhere.
Do you know what? I wouldn't bet against you doing it either, mate. Your attitude to life, it's so wholesome, isn't it, Prats? You've just got a lovely way about you. Yes, it's a business, but you're in love with it too.
All I'm thinking is Mr. Whittam's the man, isn't he? Huddersfield International Airport. That's perfectly placed to be able to jet around the country.
I was thinking, when I do get my pilot's license and I get a plane and everything, I was thinking, I'll probably end up just like ringing my mates like while I'm up there and just going like, look up, I'm about to fly past your house, and just like doing a full on Top Gun flyby of their house. Just keep doing it to everyone all day, every day. Just like just keep flying past people.
There goes Storm again, straight back over the top.
Yeah. Straight past.
I'm absolutely with Ewan on this one, Storm. I mean, this will happen. This is not excuse the pun, this is not a flight of fancy, is it, by any stretch? You will be doing this within the next, what, 2 or 3 years, I think.
I was looking at helicopters, and I was looking at doing my helicopter license, because I thought, well, you can land a helicopter anywhere, which is good, but a helicopter costs 3 times more to actually run and fly. So then, obviously, the natural thing to do is you start looking at the cheapest helicopters you can find. Not the most expensive,
naturally.
Obviously.
I wouldn't go for a cheap one, mate. Go for safety, please.
Yeah, exactly. So I looked at some helicopters and I found a 1975 helicopter that was for 30 grand. And I was like, that's a bit of me. I was like, and I was winding people up. I was saying, well, I'll just take a jump pack with me just in case it doesn't start. And they're like, oh, no. So like everyone talked me out of that. So yeah, plane. If a plane cuts out, I can just float down somewhere.
I mean, this is just a marvelous conversation, stuff. And before it gets any more bonkers, let's pull it back to some semblance of sensibility. And we're going to do a quick fire round, if you don't mind, before you and ask the final wonderful question that we wrap the podcast up with.
I'll tell you what, I'm really looking forward to this final question. It's going to be a belter.
Oh, I'm nervous.
So you've got 60 seconds and we're going to fire questions at you. Just give us whatever comes into your head straight off, mate. And if you get a lot of points, we'll congratulate you. I don't know whether there's a pair of City boots coming your way. If you win, we'll have to speak to our producer. He's the man that's in charge, apparently. Right.
I got told a watch. I got told a Rolex.
It's a Mickey Mouse one with the hands and all.
Forget the Rolex, mate. We'll probably give you a Bolex.
An even older helicopter. Right, Storm, are you ready? We're going to go in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Go on, Ewan.
Who was your motorcycling hero growing up?
Valentino Rossi all the time.
What posters did you have on your bedroom wall?
None. I only had pictures of myself.
True or false? Ryan Vickers wears ladies' knickers.
Oh, yeah, Ryan Vickers stinky knickers. Yeah, of course he does.
Who would play you in BSB the movie?
Tom Cruise or, oh my God, Tom Hardy. I love Tom Hardy. Mm-hmm.
Okay, favourite short circuit to race on?
Knock Hill in Scotland.
Least favourite circuit and why?
Snetterton. It's just really flat, boring.
European bikes or Japanese bikes?
Well, at the minute, I have to say European on the Ducati, but you can't go wrong with a Jap bike for reliability.
Biggest supporter?
Mum, family, and there's one guy called Paul Clarkson that goes every single round, wears a top hat everywhere, and he is an absolute G. He's just on it.
What music do you listen to before you race?
It literally varies. It goes from, like gangster rap to, like, Highwayman with... Johnny Cash, Hurt. It's like, it can be depressing music, it can be bouncy music. It does not matter as long as it's got a bass.
Storm.
Time's up.
Storm, I was about to say, it's a quick fire round, okay? Speed.
Oh, sorry.
What was the score?
Great answer, Storm. Let me just quickly add all that together. 8. Congratulations, you got 8.
It's all right.
I don't know how many questions there are, but you got 8.
Take it.
Well, you'd like to think there was 10 then.
Okay, let's say there was 10.
Because if there was 20, then we've done really bad.
That's you applying common sense to this podcast. That will never happen.
Right.
Right, we don't need any common sense for this final answer. And I've got a feeling you're going to give a beautiful answer for this.
I mean, for me, like, I get the quick fire, but if people are listening to this and they're driving and stuff and you're asking them questions like, yeah, quick fire, I think you do an answer and you just say an answer and that's it and it's been and gone. I think it's actually like people want to hear why it's the answer, why you like that. And so I think that is better.
That's the point of this last question, my friend. You can elaborate as much as you want and I can't wait for this one because we want to know your fantasy ride. So you're going to go somewhere idyllic. You can go anywhere on a bike in the world. Where would you ride? What bike would you be riding? Would you be with anybody? And would you have any music? What would be that soundtrack? So imagine you could ride anywhere in the world, any bike, with anybody, listening to any tunes. Where are you going?
I think it would have to be, I would say, the ones that springs to mind straight away would be, like, if MotoGP went back to Laguna Seca. I've never done Laguna Seca, but I would love to. MotoGP, go back to Laguna Seca, and I'll be teammates with Marc Marquez on a factory Ducati, and I'm on the top of my A game, and I would love to see what that would feel like. I would love to take all that in, and that would be my place. I would want to be riding around there, leading a MotoGP race around Laguna Seca.
Do you know what? You are a racer through and through. Most people go Route 66 on a Harley, chilling out, beautiful bendy roads. You're going, no, I'm on a race circuit. I'm taking on the best. Yeah, it's in your blood.
Let's actually think about that, right? You think about that, Route 66, yeah? You think, right, Goldwing, Harley, Indian, all that, music on, chilling. Give that 5 minutes to any racer that does that. The first 5 minute thought, you think, oh yeah, that's amazing. Yeah, cruising down there. Do you know how long that road is?
Thousands of miles.
You start cruising down that road and you go, now I am bored of this now. So it's not a realistic answer, is it? I think people just say that because then people will go, oh yeah, I agree with that. Yeah, that'd be amazing. They're not saying it for them.
You're a born racer. You're taking on Marc Marquez on a great track, on an amazing bike, and you're giving him a good hiding. That's beautiful. That's a beautiful fantasy ride, truly. I love it.
Dom, I mean, that this has been, it's been such a pleasure. But sadly, that's about it for this week's Full Chat, powered by Bikeshaw. As UK's largest independent motorcycle insurance broker, Bikeshaw will tailor a quote to your exact needs and help save you money on your annual bike, scooter or moped insurance. And of course, so much more.
A huge thank you to today's guest. I thought I knew him really well, but I know him even better now. That was one of my favourite ever. I don't know how we're going to top that. It was the brilliant Storm Stacey.
Well, I appreciate that. You're all so lovely. And yeah, remember, anyone who's listening, if you did enjoy it, you've got to subscribe. And I always have a motto on my YouTube. I always say, YouTube is free to subscribe. And I'm guessing, obviously, it's free to subscribe on here. Mm-hmm. And I always say, if you don't subscribe when you watch someone, you're just a n***, really, because it's free. It's absolutely free. So you're just being a n***. So I always say, you either subscribe or you're a n***.
I've got something that's slight worded in a slightly different way, Storm, but it means the same thing. Or you can press the follow button on Apple or Spotify or wherever you get your podcast from. I'm so sorry, everybody.
Honestly, Storm, thank you so much. And to, of course, you, everybody listening and watching. That's going to be a tough one to beat, that. What an episode. Until next time, goodbye.